What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Financially Free Friday episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. It is Megan, your host, and you have Kathleen today. We are going to be chatting about hiring family members and how that can translate into some big tax savings, but also some opportunities for your kids to get ahead with their own savings. We'll talk about the pros, the cons on how to hire family members, things that we need to think about. But Kathleen, welcome, and thanks for joining again today.
Thank you so much for having me again.
Yeah, and I hear you're having this question come up a lot, which kind of makes sense because it's after, as we just finished tax season, we're starting to do some tax planning for 2025. And so this question has been coming up a lot for you with some of your clients, right?
Exactly. A big chunk of my clients are business owners, and some of you listeners may know who might work with me. I'm also in the dentist group, and a lot of the dentists that I work with are practice owners, and they're married and have kids. And so they're considering hiring their family members as part of the business and wanting to understand the tax implications of that. So I think this is a really timely episode.
And yeah, hiring children or even a spouse, there's some tax planning that we can do here. It can reduce income and employment taxes. It can be a really interesting like strategy to deploy. And so what we're going to talk a lot about today is a lot of these strategies, some of these pros and cons. But I do want to just throw out the disclaimer that this is not tax advice that we're talking about today, right? Information shared today is educational, for educational purposes only, and you definitely want to consult with a tax professional about exactly how you should implement these things for yourself if you're considering it. But this is a good way to educate yourself and start the conversation with that tax professional to move forward with, right?
Exactly. Do not go tell the IRS that SOP Wealth told you to do anything. We're going to deny it all.
Well, yeah, we gave you the idea, but we did not put the stamp of approval on expectation
for you to go and do it. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So let's jump in then headfirst into hiring children. Why and how is this a powerful tax strategy? I'll kind of let you run with it to start.
Yeah. So I think that the tax benefits of hiring a child are often better than hiring any other family member. And the reason for that is the child's tax rate is often substantially lower than their business-owning parents' tax rate. In fact, in many cases, the child's tax rate will be 0%. You're probably asking, well, how is the child's tax rate 0%? Well, if you pay them and you keep their income below the standard deduction, Tax Planning 101, the standard deduction, that is the amount of money, if you're not itemizing your taxes, that is the amount of money that can be subtracted from income before the income tax is applied. So as of 2025, the year that we're recording this, that amount is $15,000 for single filers. Okay. So in essence, you could pay your child up to $15,000, and those wages are not going to be subject to federal taxes.
And so that would be paid, and it's under their social security number, so it's reported to the IRS, right? So you do have to file a tax return, but like you're saying, like with that tax return, they're under that standard threshold. So that could lead to 0% income taxes. Okay, that makes sense.
Correct. And I also want to clarify that, you know, this is not to be confused with the kiddie tax. Some of you may have heard of that concept. The kiddie tax only applies to investment income or unearned income. And the kiddie tax refers to, you know, there's tranches of investment income that get taxed at first the child's rate and then very quickly at the parent's rate. But the kiddie tax is not something you have to worry about in this situation, because when you're hiring your child, you're giving them earned income. This is not unearned or investment income. So again, kiddie tax does not apply here.
Yeah, and kiddie tax, just some background on it, why that exists, why kids are looked at more, I would say, like stronger when it comes to unearned income or investment income, is because that was at one point, that was a thought like, oh, well, I've got all these capital gains or all these investment earnings that I want to move elsewhere. And so kids, you know, that was kind of the thought like, well, I could just move this to my kid. Nope, the IRS figured that out. No, you can't just shift investment income to your kids to pay lower tax on those investment gains and avoid paying higher taxes. But yes, we're today going to be talking about earned income. So we'll kind of talk through also like what should a child be doing to get paid earned income within your business. We get to go through some examples there. But let's finish up like the tax strategy here. So we know that the income that you're shifting, that the earned income you're shifting over to your kiddos, standard deduction could mean that a big up to $15,000 could be completely tax-free. And what that also does is that takes it out of your taxable income. Because if you're the business owner, you're moving that money, like that's a business expense for you at that point, right?
Exactly. So just to give you like a hypothetical example of how I've seen this work. So say the parent is in the top federal tax bracket, 37%. They have three children and they decide they're going to hire them and they're going to pay them $12,000 each to do some minor office work. So that's 12,000 times three, that's $36,000 of basically a business expense. But otherwise, $36,000 that would have normally been taxed at that 37% rate, that is now going to be taxed at 0%. You just saved that parent just saved $13,000 in federal taxes. If you take that $36,000, multiply it by 37%, that is $13,000 in federal tax savings just by simply hiring your children.
Yep. It has like the same essence of what people were trying to do with like shifting investment income over to the kids. But this is like a legal way to do that.
Give exactly. Your kid a job. Put the little children to work.
Yes. Let's talk. So a couple examples, like what is an example maybe in some of your cases that you see parents hiring their kids to do? I have one example from one client, but what are yours?
So I have one client. She owns a chiropractor business or something like that. And she hires her children to do the laundry for the office. I've heard of clients hiring their children to clean the office, sweep floors, answer phone calls, do social media marketing. That's the thing. Kids these days are very technologically savvy. They know how to get onto a computer or a phone and log into Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, make cute social media posts or little videos. So allow them to leverage that talent for your business.
Yeah, and that's a great idea. One of my clients, her kiddos are the models in her Instagram, like social media posts and her advertising materials. So whenever they're taking pictures, it's a vet clinic, but whenever they're taking pictures with puppies or like something for their next ad that they're going to post somewhere, like it's her kids that are in those advertisements, which is pretty cool. And she pays them for modeling.
Yeah, child modeling work. Very savvy.
Yeah. And one other example I can think of, they're not a client, but my downtown area has this mom and pop Italian restaurant that we love to go to. And it's a husband and wife run operation. And they've got a daughter who is, every time we go there, it's everybody's there. Mom, dad, and then the daughter's there. And she has to be probably under 12. I don't think she's that much, you know, close to 12, but she is sometimes the host. Like when it's one of those operations where you come in, you get a menu and you order at the table, but you go sit down. And so she's kind of the host, quote, quote. Well, she like hands you the menu. Like, do you have any questions? And she's so cute. And then other times I see her run around and kind of bust tables. So she is definitely putting in some work. And I'm hoping, you know, maybe there's a right opportunity for me to ask, like, hey, you're paying her, right? For business reasons. Yeah. but that's another example. Like if you have kind of a mom and pop shop, some of those cutesy things or the kind of simple things that they could do while they're there with you.
Yeah, really good point.
But let's talk more about some savings and tax savings opportunities. One of the things actually we get a lot of questions about in our client base is like setting up a Roth IRA for kids who are working, right?
Exactly. Because one of the requirements to contribute to a Roth IRA is you have to have earned income to be able to contribute to it, And so the wages that you're paying your child, that is considered earned income that is now eligible for Roth IRA contributions. So that's what I see some of my clients doing. They're paying them just enough wages to be able to max out their Roth IRA. Like the max right now is $7,000 a year. And that can be a fantastic way to not only teach your kids the power of savings and investing, they could use that money towards their future college education. You could use the Roth as kind of like an education Roth, because if the account is open for at least 5 years, you can take the money out tax and penalty free for qualified college expenses. Or you could just simply use it as a future retirement fund that is now accumulating and growing at a very early age. It can really grow into a really huge balance later on as they get closer to retirement.
Yeah. And amazing tax benefits all the way around, right? Like this is almost like the equivalent of an HSA in the sense of like a Roth IRA is post-tax. But if you are under that standard deduction, your tax rate is 0%. So you're putting money in, not having to pay taxes on it legally, and it's never going to be taxed again. So it's almost like a HSA.
Exactly. That's a great way to look at it.
Mm-hmm. And in our previous episode, we did talk a lot about HSAs. You could also, you know, consider, since the standard deduction is $15,000, $7,000 is the max for the Roth IRA. If you wanted them to put savings on steroids, like teach them like super savings, they could also be contributing. If y'all have a family HSA account, like you were talking about in that episode, you can have them contribute to their own HSA. So really talk about setting someone up for their future.
Beautiful opportunities here, guys. I hope you're taking notes.
So that's pretty cool. That's the savings component and like the tax benefits around that savings component for kids. Let's talk about employment taxes, though, employment tax savings.
And Megan, before we get to that point, there are a couple more points from the business owner perspective, why employing children really could be helpful. I just wanted to touch on real quickly. This is especially beneficial if you're a high income business owner, where the revenue that the business is generating is so high that it might not qualify for a QBI deduction. So QBI, that stands for Qualified Business Income Deduction. This was part of the tax cuts and a provision of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was passed in 2017 that allows business owners to exclude up to 20% of their income from taxes. But the deduction is subject to income phase outs. And oftentimes we see that business owners just simply make too much money to take advantage of the QBI deduction. But hiring your family can be a great way to employ what is called a deduction production strategy, because now you're paying wages that is lowering the AGI, and it could get it low enough to now it's qualifying. You're qualifying for the QBI deduction. So that's a great strategy to consider there too. If your income is too high to qualify for the QBI deduction, can we hire some family members to help get the AGI low enough so now we can qualify for the deduction?
So yeah, getting below those thresholds for both QBI and just in general tax brackets too, like getting below the next tax bracket.
Exactly. And that can be beneficial for student loans, especially if you're on an income-driven payment plan. The IDR plan is based on your AGI, and hiring family members can, again, help get that AGI lower and get your student loan payments lower. And so I tell people business planning and student loan planning go together like peanut butter and jelly. It's just right. Because as an entrepreneur, there are just so many more tax planning opportunities that you can employ to keep your AGI low and keep your student loan payments minimal compared to a W-2 employee, aside from maxing out pre-tax accounts. There's just not a lot of strategies available to you.
Yeah. And actually, I think that makes me want to skip real quick. So we'll come back to employment tax savings, but can we skip real quick to the business structure and like what types of business structures matter and the differences there?
Absolutely. So, you know, everything we're talking about mostly applies to sole proprietorships and partnerships. Okay. And the reason for that is If you're an S corp, you can hire your child, but they're not going to get some of the same employment tax breaks as if they were working for a sole proprietor or a partnership.
And so sole proprietor partnership, that could be like anyone with an LLC who's not filing as an S corp. Is that right? Okay.
Correct.
Yeah. So like the true flow through entities, LLCs, maybe even LLP, like if you're a practitioner and that's required in your state, and then partnerships. Okay. And so with S corps, talk to us a little bit about the cautions there. Can you hire kids through the S corp? What are the downsides to that though?
Yeah. So it's probably best to start with, well, what are the tax benefits if they're hired by a sole prop or a partnership?
Yeah, let's go there.
Yeah. So, you know, under that structure, if the child is under 18 and the parent or parents own the sole proprietorship or the partnership, you do not have to pay FICA or FUTA taxes on the child's wages. So FICA taxes being the employer's portion of the Social Security and Medicare taxes, or unemployment, federal unemployment taxes. Okay, so that's waived if they're under 18, under sole proprietor or partnership. If the child is older than 17, but younger than 21, the sole proprietorship or partnership is subject to FICA taxes. So they have to pay their portion of Social Security and Medicare, but they're not subject to the FUTA taxes, the unemployment tax.
Okay. So only after 21 for unemployment.
Exactly. So with S corps, the difference is that the FICA and the FUTA tax breaks are not available when the children are employed by S. It doesn't matter how old they are. You will have to pay the employer portion of those taxes. But there are a number of workarounds that I've seen clients explore. First and foremost, the non-workaround is that you just go ahead and hire the child anyway, and you pay the employment taxes. Because in many situations, the difference in income tax rates between the parent's tax rate and the child's tax rate will more than make up for any additional employment taxes that are owed. As a planner, that's the route that I would lean towards or recommend clients go to. Just go ahead and bite the bullet and pay the taxes, okay? Some other workarounds I see is converting the S corp into a sole proprietorship or an eligible partnership. I don't know that that makes sense. Not if that is the sole reason why you're making that change. I just find it hard to imagine that it makes that much, like you're going to be saving that much more money from not paying payroll taxes to make that big of a change in your business. But that is one option. Another workaround that I've seen is the S corp establishing a management company in the form of a sole proprietorship that's created by the parent, so that that management company basically provides management services to the S corp. And then the management company hires the children. Okay. That could be a workaround, but understand that if you get audited, that is something that might be heavily scrutinized or reviewed by the IRS. And again, it might not be worth making that huge of a change just to save on some small employment taxes. But I've seen people do it. And if that's something you're curious about, that really should be, you should confer with your CPA, an attorney, or some sort of tax professional if you're going to go that path.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, question, this might be a silly question. Could somebody simply with an S corp just pay their child as if they're a contractor?
I hadn't thought about that.
Because I can understand like running through payroll, because you as an S corp person, you're going to have W-2 wages too. You're going to have to run yourself through payroll for something, for a reasonable wage. And technically, like an S corp, you're supposed to be solo, but you can hire your spouse and immediate family. So I wonder if that could be.
But then at that point, they wouldn't be considered an employee. That child would be considered a business owner.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. All right. So that might be the catch there. They're not an employee. So then, okay.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
But great question, though.
Because I could see like somebody asking that for sure. Okay. So that's helpful. And I think that's, you know, for my client, I was thinking of, I do think they are structured as an LLC of some kind. So that makes sense why they're able to do that for the modeling compensation. And then yours, like I know dental practices, chiropractic offices, like a lot of times they are also LLCs or LLPs if required. So this could be super reasonable to be able to expect to do for a lot of our business owner folks that listen. And then if you are an S corporation, one of these workarounds might be able to be an option. And I agree with you, like the FICA taxes, avoiding those, they would be really small. Because if you're paying your kid $15,000, like, yeah, maybe you're not avoiding the FICA there with having an S corporation. But like you were saying, the benefits of still paying your child and getting that income off your books far outweigh the small little taxes that you might have to pay FICA.
Exactly.
Yeah. So not too much to stress about there. Still a good option for S corporations. So, okay. Practical considerations. What are some of those?
Yeah. So this is important. So if you're going to hire your child, they need to be doing something. They need to be doing right. work. You can't pay them to be cute.
Right. Unless they're a model. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, there you go. That's
but
the
yeah,
caveat.
Legitimately, like they have to be modeled in your advertising. You have to have proof.
Exactly. The IRS says that the work has to be real and the compensation has to be reasonable. So you cannot pay your child $80,000 a year to sweep floors. That is just begging for an IRS audit.
Yeah.
So again, going back to what we had talked about earlier about, you know, examples of things they can be doing, like answering phones, cleaning laundry, like those are things that are real and reasonable that a child can actually do and get paid for.
Yep. And then recording maybe those hours, just like a normal employee would. They check in, they check out. Or having like some kind of documentation or proof of like what they did over the course of the year for that compensation. I think that's important.
Amen. Exactly. Treat them like any other employee. I would be drafting employment agreements, outlining what are the duties they're responsible for, how much they're getting paid. Yes, absolutely.
Awesome. Now, legal limits. There's some child labor stuff we got to talk about too, right?
Absolutely. We need to do it. If we're going to be hiring our children, we need to make sure we're complying with child labor laws. And there's a law called the Fair Labor Standards Act that kind of outlines some of the rules involved when hiring children. For example, under the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act, children under 14 are prohibited from working, though there are a number of exceptions like babysitting, newspaper delivery, acting, modeling, and such. Under the same law, children 14 and 15 can be employed, but only work a limited number of hours, and they can't be working in a hazardous job. If they're 16 and 17 years old, they can work an unlimited amount of hours, but it can't be a hazardous job. Once the child turns 18, then they can work a hazardous job. That restriction goes away. However, all of these restrictions I just outlined does not apply to children working in family businesses. Under the Fair Labor Standards Act, children can work in the parent's business as long as work is not dangerous or with hazardous materials. And the structure of the business does not matter. You just have to make sure that the business is wholly owned by the parent or parents.
Gotcha. So if you own a sawmill, they can't be operating the saw, but maybe they can, you know, sweep up the sawdust.
The sawdust. Exactly. Exactly.
Makes total complete sense.
Yeah.
I think that gives us a really good outline of hiring kids. Is there anything we missed?
No, I think we've covered all the basics.
Okay. Cool. And so next, so we talked about hiring kiddos, like your children, and these would have to be your biological or legal children, right? That might be the last
Correct.
Like clarifying
Not,
thing.
No fur so. Children.
Yeah. Dang it. Man, we get the short end of the stick out there as fur parents.
You sure do.
But you could also be hiring a spouse. And we see that a lot also within our community, within our client base. Folks will hire their spouse for a number of different things. And there could be some indirect tax benefits from that, right? So maybe let's go down this route for a minute.
Yeah. So sometimes there's not direct income tax savings, particularly if you're filing jointly, right? Because the combined income generally stays the same on the same joint return. The exception, though, is if you're filing separately, You know, that potentially can create some direct tax savings, particularly if the spouse you're hiring is in a lower tax bracket. Again, allowing the spouse with the higher tax bracket to now shift income to the lower tax bracket spouse. So there could be some direct savings there.
Filing separately too can be kind of interesting with community property states as well. Let's say you're both chiropractors, you both are in your practice, you know, but one spouse is not actively practicing as much. Maybe they just do the books or they just do the scheduling or something. If you live in California, community property state, you're both technically chiropractors. You could technically have the same income if you were both practicing. But honestly and realistically, maybe in this case, one partner is not doing the duties that the other partner is doing, which warrants like a lower compensation. And so in a community property state, if filing separately, let's say like the one who's actively practicing in that capacity, making more income, filing separately in a community property state can split the income between the two tax returns, like we've talked about lots on this podcast. So that could be another way, like filing separately has some tax benefits, even though you're both maybe working in the practice, but maybe one of you has a lesser capacity. So I don't know. It kind of works out the same. Like if they worked a totally different job or they didn't work at all, you could still split the income, but that's just maybe another component there.
Yep, absolutely.
So employee benefits though, what are some big benefits there? Because I could see this being a bigger piece, not necessarily tax savings directly, but maybe having access to employee benefits would be a huge thing.
Exactly. And I'm thinking about a client in particular who recently, she's a dentist. She got a long-term disability. She can't work as a dentist anymore. And she's about to get married. And her husband is also a dentist, but a practice owner. And so she was asking me about the benefits of potentially going to work for her husband, not as a dentist, but like doing other admin stuff. They could be unlocking a number of huge benefits. One of them is employee benefits. You know, by hiring her, now she can have access to the practice's 401k plan. She could have her contributions from her earnings matched. She could contribute to the profit sharing component of the plan, potentially significantly boost her retirement savings there.
Literally, I have a client who does this too. They're a client and a tax client where one is the practicing professional in the dental space, and the spouse, they actively work in the business, but they do the scheduling, the calling, like the admin type work. And she's paid reasonably, and she has access to the solo 401k that they have set up and the profit sharing and all of that good stuff, which does it like doubled the amount of savings, the saving bucket available, because she is working in the practice and now she has benefits where if she was not working in the practice, just as a stay-at-home parent, wouldn't have access to a 401k type bucket to contribute to. So it does. It puts savings a little on steroids if you're able to contribute more and the spouse is working in the business and lowers taxable income. I know that was the other point to that.
Exactly. Exactly. Another thing with this client, particular client, why I think it'd be beneficial for her to be hired is she's paying her healthcare premiums just out of pocket off the marketplace. And that could be a good opportunity for her husband's practice to create a company health reimbursement arrangement, something called an HRA, where now his practice can convert personal medical expenses into deductible business expenses. You establish this HRA. You use it to reimburse the spouse employee for any unreimbursed medical expenses, and that can include healthcare premiums, co-pays, deductibles for family or prescriptions, and that can be a great way to cover her medical costs and do it in a tax-deductible way for the practice.
Yeah, that's a great idea, actually, because medical expenses, they can be really high. It can be a big expense for a family, so that could be a good way to reduce at least the taxable income there and then have another deductible expense, which at the end of the day helps the whole family. So
yeah, exactly.
That's good. And there's other kinds of deductible benefits too, right?
Exactly. So if the spouse is now, you know, working for your business and maybe they're using their cell phone for some of the time to answer client phone calls or make client phone calls or whatever that may be, now that's an eligible business deduction. I don't know if the entire phone bill is a business deduction, but at least the portion of it that is being used for business can now be deducted. Also, if you want to now bring your spouse along for business trips, as long as that spouse has a legitimate business role, you can pay to fly them out and cover their hotel or whatever and have it be a legitimate business deduction.
Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe even the home office deduction, right? I know it's not massive, but let's say your spouse does have a dedicated workspace at home to help you with your business, like that might be another deductible benefit as well, being able to deduct that percentage. So, oh man, good stuff. I always love chatting through these things with you.
Oh, likewise.
So what are, let's kind of drill down. We'll kind of put the security blanket on here and say, hey, we still need to think about these things. Like, what are the compliance tips, the cautions? What do we need to make sure is done so that these things are as great as we're kind of chalking them up to be?
Yeah. So some of this we covered already, but just to reiterate again, because this is super important. Whether you're hiring children or spouses, there need to be formal employment agreements. Again, you need to treat them just like any other employee. Specify in the agreement how much are folks going to get paid, what type of work will be performed. Having time tracking and task logs for both children and spouses. Have them punch a time clock or write their hours on a timesheet just so there's documentation in the event that you do get audited. You have something to show the IRS that what you did was legitimate.
Yeah. Or they're on like your whole employee schedule. Like you've got your employee time schedule. They should be on there too because they are an employee. And then we talked about reasonable compensation too. Like you were saying, like don't pay your sweeper $80,000. That is not right. What you would pay a normal sweeper off the side of the road, right?
So, right. Exactly. Exactly. The pay must reflect the actual services performed to avoid the IRS scrutiny. And some of this starts to get, I'm not going to say sketchy because that's judgmental, but it gets questionable. You know, going back to the child modeling, I have a client, for example, who's doing that, a dental practice owner. He's paying his child $7,000 a year for imaging or publishing rights for the photos that he took of his child for the website. And the question is a photo really worth $7,000 a year?
Yeah. So it might be helpful to have some like comparisons, like what is the going rate for, like, if they were to literally go for a modeling gig, like, are they paying by the hour? Are they paying by the number of clicks it gets? Like, how are they paying? How is that normal job compensated? And you should probably mirror what that looks like. So it can be, because I think we say this a lot, like, especially in the student loan world, like, you want to just make sure that if you're ever questioned about what you're doing, you feel confident about your response back. No, I did this because of XYZ. You don't want to then be all of a sudden like, well, I thought 7,000 was fair. You know, you want to have a reason for why you thought it was fair.
Exactly. And in this particular scenario, you know, they did confirm with their CPA that it was on the up and up. But I still encourage them to make sure you document everything and be ready to defend this if you do get audited.
Yeah. And audits, I think, you know, hopefully are not scary things, because an audit just means a double check of what you submitted. And if you did everything above board, you should be good, right? So,
exactly.
And yeah, that kind of ties into like, beware of complex workarounds. We talked about some workarounds, like with the S Corp, for example, and hiring kids. Sometimes the complexity is not worth it and definitely needs to be communicated with your CPA about what the pros and cons are, the risks are. Is there an easier way, a more straightforward way to do what you're trying to do? So, complex workarounds. We're all about loopholes here because we talk about loopholes with student loans all the time. But the, what is that saying? Like the juice has to be worth the squeeze.
The squeeze. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if it's too squeezy, I don't know what the, I'm going to stop. I don't know how to talk. No, anyways.
No, you're right on track, Megan.
Any other factors to consider that we didn't touch
on? Yeah. And then, you know, aside from the child labor laws, both federally and on the state level, we didn't really talk about state level child labor laws. You want to make sure you're abiding by the labor laws in your state. So it might be good to confer with the labor law attorney before you go ahead and hire anyone. One final thing I think is worthwhile to consider is if when you're paying your children, and particularly understanding the impact on financial aid eligibility for college, particularly if you know they are on the college track. When you employ your children, keep in mind that, you know, the money held in your child's name may reduce the amount of financial aid that's available to them. That's because under the financial aid formula that is used to determine federal aid eligibility at every college and university, students are expected to contribute between 20% to 25% of their assets, while parental contributions are capped at 5.6%. So if you're showing that you're giving them more than 5.6%, that could adversely impact their ability to get like federal grants, student loans, scholarship, and other aid.
Yeah, that's definitely worth mentioning. Because yeah, kids' income, when it comes to the expected family contribution, that calculation that goes into their college, like FAFSA and the applications and everything, like the kids' income is way more impactful than your income as the parent. So that's something to be careful about too. Like there's pros and cons to everything. So if your kid is getting closer to college age, like maybe compare, like if you think that aid is something that is going to be available to you, I would say. Usually aid, though, let me kind of back up. Financial aid, when it comes to grants, like the Pell Grant or grants, scholarships, a lot of times they can be based on financial need, like an extreme financial need. And so I wouldn't stress too much. If you make great income and you're making great enough income to where you're paying your kids, yes, they might show some income if you're not stopping their income by like age 17, 18, like as they're going to college, but you may not be missing out on too much because you may not have been getting that free aid anyways, if that makes
sense. Right. Great point. Yeah.
So I don't want to like stress people out about that because if you're in that position, you're paying your kiddos, like you're probably doing fine financially and you're not going to get some of that free aid anyways when you're applying for colleges. So you don't have to stress too much about it. And then, so that's just one note I thought I'd mention.
And it still could be worth doing, especially if that money is going into a Roth, because that is not counted on the FAFSA, from what I recall. 529 plan is, though.
Yeah, 529. Yeah, but retirement money is totally locked away. So yeah, if you're really paying them and you've prioritized like their compensation really just goes to fund a Roth IRA, great. It's not going to show up anywhere because it's a Roth. It's a retirement account that doesn't get factored into FAFSA. Well, good. Well, I think this gave us a really good outline and some good, like juicy things to go to chat with our CPA about or your financial planner about to implement maybe in your own practice or to think about if you're somebody who's an aspiring business owner. I know in the future, like this is definitely like when I have kiddos, like I'll be considering some of these strategies. So we'll have to decide, Kathleen, what we would make my kids do in the future, like what their jobs would be for the firm. But
we'll see. Take TikTok videos of you, maybe.
Maybe my videographer. We'll see what app is out in 10 years. We'll see. but thank you so much. Is there anything we left out? Anything left before we close things out?
I don't think so. I think we've summed it up pretty well.
All right. Well, awesome. Well, you know where to find us, SLP, for your student loan specific needs. If you need a one-on-one consultation to tackle the student loan debt you've got at hand, or if you're wanting a more full-blown financial planning relationship, go to slpwealth.com and you can check us out there. If you want to work with Kathleen specifically, definitely request Kathleen and we'll get that happen. We'll make that happen. And thanks for listening. I hope everyone has a lovely weekend coming up and I'll catch you on the next one.
Bye, y'all.
What if you could get fiduciary financial planning specific to your profession that's student loan aware that could change your life for a price much better than you ever dreamed possible? If that sounds good to you, go to slpwealth.com/pod for a free, no obligation, 15-minute intro call with one of our own fiduciary financial planners to see if we could be a good fit for you. This podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered individualized investment advice. If a specific investment is mentioned, do not consider it a recommendation to buy or sell the investment. Seek first advice from a financial professional before implementing any strategies discussed. All investments involve risk, and past performance does not guarantee future results. Yay, compliance.